Welcome to Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. I'm Phil McKenzie.
I'm Michael Brooks.
On Point is where we highlight someone getting it right. And
yes,
we're joined again by the one, the only legend.
I'm checking my pulse again.
Impresario.
Yeah, he doesn't like that, right?
Man about town. Mr. Lewis, Mr. Steve Lewis. What's up, brother?
Hey, how are you doing? I'm so welcomed back. I love it here.
Yeah, we love it. We love having you here, man. This is you're the guru of Dope Boys.
I have not been so cozy in a little room like that since prison.
All right. Relax, Steve. To be clear, we have a very nice studio.
We do.
It is very it's elegant.
What it lacks in windows, it makes up in charm.
We got window right there.
Yeah,
you can walk to the window from here. You can walk to the window from here.
You need the window.
Yes, window. All right.
No, I actually like this place. It's very nice. It's a utilitarian. That's it.
Prison utilitarian. Yeah.
The first rule of these kind of interviews is to piss off the people. Once you got them,
what the fuck? Welcome back, the guru. We love having you. Yeah, it's great being your little fucking dingy pod studio.
Reminds me of prison.
I just want to remind you who you're talking to.
There it is.
What are we talking about?
Are the guys in prison as pretty as us?
Oh yeah, some of them.
Okay,
that's high praise. Right.
Yeah, they have all day to work on it. I mean, I was in good shape in prison. I had a 4-pack, but everyone else had like 8-packs. You know, but yeah, you know, you do nothing but eat. Read books and work.
That's
out.
Like when you always is like, I mean, this guy I talked to was a Marine, and he had just left the Marines, and I was like, what was it like, man? You know, and I'm thinking all these kind of big picture questions, and he was a Puerto Rican dude. And he goes, honestly, Holmes, he goes, I was in great fucking shape.
I was in great shape when I came out. Unbelievable. The best shape of my life, you know. But that's it. I don't want to go back. You know, I've had it.
Yeah, I don't want to be in good shape then if that's the what it takes.
And also, just to be clear, if you're listening to the show, Steve's done. He's not going back.
No.
Yeah, I'm cool.
Yeah that's on. A wrap He's on that. Yeah.
Bigger and better.
All right.
You know, let's talk a little bit about the future. Let's talk a little bit. Yeah, the future. Let's go with the future or the present. Miss You.
Yeah.
Just opened up yesterday, last night.
Well, it wasn't the opening was like a week ago, soft opening. But this was my opening, like the unveiling, inviting my friends and letting people that I think count see it, as opposed to the owner's friends. And
right.
So that last night was a letting an unveiling, I called it. Let people see what I've done, what I've been working on. Because let's face it, I was sick last year, and I was in Philadelphia for 6 months. So I lost a year, which I didn't lose it, but I did different things. So this is the first project I completed since then. And I was very proud of it. I mean, I love it. And I just think I put a lot of effort into it, way more than most designers put into it. You know, and I there's a lot of detail. And the chef is... Esther Choi, and she's a hot chef. She does Mock Bar out of here on Flatbush, which is a great place. And she does a place in the Chelsea Market. It's Korean, Americanized Korean food, which is not to say dumbed down Korean food, just done with a flair, like really cool hot dogs and hamburgers with a Korean twist.
Nice, nice.
And it was really, the food's delicious. So usually they give me a bad chef and I do a good design. And, you know, the design carries it, but... She's great, and I recommend people going to it. It's fine.
Now, when you talk about like designing a space, like mm-hmm. like what does that really entail? Because some people think it's just going to be the decor and that kind of stuff, but you're more involved than that.
Well, I'm more than I'm not a decorator. I'm a designer.
Grand strategist.
And there's a difference between a decorator and a designer. Decorators can pick out fabrics and and cute little things. Where a designer actually has to understand the flow of the room and where the plugs go and the use of the room. And the first thing you do is you talk to the owners and find out their goals. You change a couple of them because sometimes they are too ambitious or not ambitious enough. And in this case, Esther was a woman, and she's really cool, 31 years old, and I wanted to make it a feminine. It's the most feminine restaurant, most women-friendly restaurant I've ever done, and I was very proud of it. But plus, there were budget restrictions. So once you have an idea what the budget is and what the goals of the people involved are, then you basically have to sit around or walk through the space and let it speak to you. And each space speaks to you. In this case, the front, there's a storefront, it's all glass, it goes up like 18 feet. And so that spoke to me of light and flowers and romance. And so I did a floral garden setting. When you walk in there, you feel like you're in a secret garden, and it's very, very, very friendly and airy, and a lot of shadows. And that makes sense. And it's, I love it. I mean, I haven't been this proud of a project since Butter, I think, which was a long time ago. I loved when I did Butter. I mean, I walked out of there thinking I'd done a great job. And this one I feel great about.
What's your process for that? Like, how do you begin the thought, like your mind map of what something, like, I understand you have other people you talk to and there's other influences or whatever, but even you said Secret Garden, and I mean that was a kid's book, right?
It was like a movie. It's a movie.
But whatever it may be, that's just to me, it's always fascinating when a random piece of filmmaking, music, book, whatever, sporting event that shows up.
I got 50 designs in my head.
Right.
So I'm walking around with, right. I can design a place on 10 days notice. So it's not like, because I see things, I constantly take photos of things I like and think about how I can extrapolate off that idea into a space.
Just like with your phone, or you have a camera?
My phone. My phone. Perfect. I'm walking around taking pictures of phones. Yeah. And sometimes it's a handbag that I like the stitching or the leather, and I can make that into a banquette at a later time. So there's a huge treasure trove of beautiful ideas or cool ideas that I'm going, I have at least 50 restaurants and at least 25, 30 nightclub concepts. And so, I mean, when I did the club spa, I from the day I got the job until the day it opened was 38 days. And it turned out pretty nice.
Yeah, spa so, was dope.
Yeah, so, I mean, because I had it prepared. I knew what I wanted. That was based on a movie called The Tenth Victim, which is a incredible Carlo Ponti movie, a future movie with Marcello Mastroianni and Ursula Andress. And it's hard to find, but worth finding. The Tenth Victim. And it's a great, it's a future where wars are outlawed. And you become a victim or a hunter, and you have to kill, the hunter has to kill the victim before she figures out, or he figures out who you are, and you get through the 10th time you survive, you get all the rewards the world can give you, and you're a hero, like Michael Jordan of the world. So it takes place in the future, so the clothes are incredible, the furniture is incredible, the cars are incredible, and of course Marcello and Ursula Andress are incredible. So I based that club on that movie,
right.
And I have a storage, and with this I didn't have a lot of budget. And one thing about doing something floral is there's tons of resources for floral. I mean, there's curtains, there's everything that we are surrounded by floral prints and patterns. And in this case, I used wrought iron gazebos that I bought at a garden center. They're 8 feet wide, 5 feet high. And the advantage of them is they are 8 feet wide, 5 foot high, made out of wrought iron, heavily detailed, and they cost nothing. Because gazebos cost nothing. Right. So, and they're made of metal, and the shipping costs were not that bad. And so I bought these things, and they cost me $1,750 a piece. And I've got an 8-foot chandelier hanging, which I used to shine lights through. So that was the basis. Is I had the light coming in, I had little budget, and I went with a floral theme, and I think it turned out right. If you don't believe me, if you call me a liar, go take a look at it.
Right. I'm thinking two things real quick right now. This is amazing. And Phil, how the fuck did she not get me this invite?
I dropped the ball on this. Apparently, this is now being laid on my shoulders. But I was at the spot last night, and I will co-sign for everything you're saying. I had a couple of sliders. Sliders were great.
They're great.
Some champagne. It was good.
That's the champagne company I work for. You know, they helped me out with that. It was really cute. Oh. It was a great party. I had, you know, Marky Ramone showed up. He's my old friend. I know him for almost 40 years. Yeah. What's his name? Andy Rourke from the Smiths, and a lot of models, a lot of queens. A lot of a real diverse crowd. And irony is usually when those kind of events, people come in, they leave. This party went on. People stayed, and they were, you know, until the very end. And I was very proud of the party. And
awesome.
In fact, I've gotten asked to throw in a lot of parties from last night. But I also got another gig. Somebody hired me last night to do their lounge, and I'm going to do it. And you know, so it's great.
So
all good news for New York.
When you talk about a party like that,
mm-hmm.
and pulling off that space where there's like all these different people kind of flowing in, and they stay, like they're not there just to be seen, they're there to actually like enjoy the party. Like,
yeah.
Do you think the space can maintain that without your crowd being there? Like, what do you think the future is for the space itself? Because it is beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, when I ran nightclubs, I used to say for a nightclub to be self-sufficient, you had to have, well, if it was a 500-person space, you had to literally have 100,000 people through the room. And after that, a lot of them liked it, a lot of them didn't care, but they would come back. Because the best customer is the guy who wakes up and says, what are we doing tonight? Let's go to that club. Let's go to that, as opposed to the person who's, you have to have a promoter and drag them in and all that. When you get to a point where 100,000 people have gone in and let's say half of them like it, then all of a sudden you're not paying as much in promotional fees. You can entertain rather than drag people in, and you're making money at that point. So I invited, it was a couple hundred people there last night. I sent out 5,000, you know, Facebook messages, but a Monday in the summer. I was very happy. I predicted the number and we hit it. And I think that a lot of my friends now will, having seen the photos from last night, will go visit Miss You, and the reviews on the food have been excellent. So I think it'll buzz. So I think the answer is my friends are going to go back, and everyone eats, and I'm going to go once a month. I'm going to go and bring a party of four or six, and you know, and just keep tweaking it. And if they need help, I'll give them advice. And but they're good. They're really good operators, and I think they're going to get a good crowd. And let's face it, the place is on Stanton and Allen, and that's a hot place to be.
Yeah, definitely.
Right now.
How is it different doing, like, because you mentioned butter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I want to go back to that spot, because that's another spot I know. And I was talking about it because I was on Lafayette
right
on Saturday, and I was walking by it. The space is now Asia de Cuba.
Yeah, okay.
But before it was butter, I remember it was Pangea.
No, Pangea was next door.
Was that next door?
Yeah, it was a butter. Before it was butter, was a Belgian beer place.
Okay,
and the where the dining room was a bar. It was the worst place to put a bar in the world, you know. But they had no chance. They had no idea what they were doing. And they Richie Akiva and Scott Satiano took over the space with David Marvisi, I think, was an investor at the time, and. First thing I did was move the bar to correct location and develop the downstairs and created a vibe in the place that was, you know, honestly, it lasted a very long time.
Yeah, because that area was not a hub.
No, not at that time.
As compared to like
what years is it?
Oh, I don't remember. I would say 90s. No, it's later than that. I'd say 94, 95. 95 maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, mid-90s.
Yeah. You know what? As I said once before on the show, I don't know dates. You know, but yeah, when we opened it was nothing.
Trying to help them track out there, but yeah. I got you. Yeah.
But that was a very successful club. I got best new restaurant design for it, which I was very happy with, because that was literally the first restaurant I ever designed. I had done other design clubs, but I really spent a lot of time in restaurants looking at waiter stations and what I didn't like. There was one place I was highly regarded in Philadelphia called Washington Square, and you walk in, the first thing you see is the ass of the maitre d'. And I just, you know, and it was like, okay. And then in the same restaurant, which is a highly touted restaurant, the same restaurant, it was cold in the place, and the person I was with was an extremely famous interior designer and known to everyone in the place. And she said, you know, it's very cold in here, which it was. And they said, well, we really can't turn down the cold. And they gave her a blanket. And the fact that they solved the problem by having blankets available for people who complain, I knew that was wrong.
Yeah.
So I studied all these restaurants and how they. Yeah.
How does that work?
So you're fine dining in a Snuggie.
In a Snuggie, yeah. Well, it was a nice wool blanket, something you would buy at ABC Carpeting Blanket Bar tomorrow. You know, but it was a really nice blanket, but it was silly. You know, and we were looking at each other going, whoa, you know. So I learned by watching and talking to people, and I did well because butter was a big success, and very few changes to the design went on for 10 years. But like all designers, a funny story with that was I came in about 3 years later, and there was a big, what they call an oriental rug, downstairs as you went down. I guess it was something with the carpeting. They put an oriental rug, and I was like, how does this, it didn't fit at all, the decor. And I was so upset, I wanted to put a sign up outside, designed by Steve Lewis, except for the oriental rug.
You never found out who was responsible.
Oh, I knew. I found out. I made a big stink. And it did disappear, you know, but it was, you know, these are the things that happen when you leave owners alone. And one of the reasons I don't go back too often is because, you know, I just, at last night we did Miss You, I did this beautiful bar that lit up. It's an old English door. Etched glass, and I underlit it and everything. And last night they were putting like napkins over it and all sorts of, you know, garnish trays, and you couldn't see it. And I was like going, okay, guys, this is, you know, you're beautiful, but this is it right here. Is, look at that. But maybe that's my perspective. Maybe I didn't make enough room for garnish trays, which I did, by the way. But anyway, I anticipated garnish trays, but yeah, you have to anticipate all those things, like garnish trays and light bulbs and changing this and cleaning, and that's what a designer does as opposed to a decorator. I mean, you really have to understand that the waiters are going to come through here. Oh wait, the bathrooms, you know. So you have to leave yourself enough room so it's comfortable. And I like it. It's really like, I would do it for free, but don't tell anybody. I'm not going to tell. But I think it's like it's playing with a Lego set or a Erectus set or one of those Lincoln Logs. You're building things, you know? And it's like somebody's giving you tons of money, and you get to build something that you desire. And it's kind of fun, And
Sounds really fun.
So I would do it if I hit the lottery for $100 billion. I would still design people's thing. I heard that Danny DeVito still cut people's hairs like 10 years after he because he was a hairdresser. And
that's
he still
interesting.
Cut friends' hairs.
I did not know that.
I don't even know it's true, but I was told this by a hairdresser.
Every time Danny DeVito comes up, get Shorty.
Yeah, well,
so good in that movie.
Danny DeVito is an underrated actor.
He is an underrated actor, isn't he?
From Taxi to everything he's done.
Ken Shorty is such the perfect call out for me, because it just specifically the role. I mean, he's hysterical in it, and maybe that's the first time I realized. I love him, the guy always just shows Mars Attacks. Right,
you know, he really,
every time he shows up, he's strong.
He's strong. I mean, come on, we're talking the guy's 4'7",
right?
You know, and he really has, you know,
he's got energy
in an industry where you have to be beautiful,
right? He's got real energy.
He's a leading man, and right. You know,
yeah. I mean,
well, that's another reason why
I
get Shorty. He's funny.
War of the Roses, and right, I mean, he's been amazing.
Yeah, he's a great actor. He's fun.
Yeah,
you know, I enjoy him. Yeah.
Is it? We talked before. We'll get to the time capsule business in a minute, but. Okay. But I'm curious because, you know, I am always interested in the sort of political angle on things. And we talked before a little bit about Giuliani versus Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. Maybe Bloomberg was actually significantly less helpful to the industry than Giuliani. Is there a different feeling at all in the de Blasio? What's de Blasio like?
I think de Blasio is the best mayor for nightlife we've ever had. I'm not a big de Blasio guy, but the fact that he's going to appoint
a
nightlife.
I like de Blasio a little bit.
Who?
Yeah, I like de Blasio.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's appointing
a nightlife czar
with the idea of promoting business. And this is brilliant because the entire city depends on this, believe it or not.
Oh, totally does.
It's not just culturally, which is important, but business-wise, the restaurants are closing, clubs are having trouble, and a lot of it falls at the feet of the community boards who are not allowing people to do business. You have a club that has a 4 o'clock license. They want to flip it to another owner, sell it, and the community boards are not allowing it. They're giving them 1 o'clock licenses. Mm-hmm. Who can exist at 1 o'clock? But that's okay. The club can't exist. But when the clubs close, there's a domino effect. The cabs get hurt. The Korean delis get hurt. And you can talk Boston, talk Philly, but they don't have Korean delis open 24 hours.
Boston doesn't. I mean, I can't talk about Philly, but I mean, I know Boston pretty well, and Boston just simply does not have anywhere near the type of ancillary businesses that New York has at all.
You know where New York gets hurt? Will get hurt really badly in the restaurant industry. Yeah. Because if you start closing clubs at 1 o'clock, then the last turn, the 10 p.m. turn in a restaurant will not exist. Because people often do at 10 o'clock, go to dinner, and then go to a club. Yeah. But if you have to be at a club at 8:30 or 9 o'clock to party because you're closing at 1, you're going to lose this restaurant industry. And if you lose the restaurant industry, we don't have a lot going for us other than tourism and food and services in this town. And so I think it could be a disaster.
So you think Blasio gets it?
He got it. He really does. He's appointing a czar. I know people who are running for it. I've spoken to most of them. There's some people who are not qualified running, but there are real serious people who want to do it. And it has to be brings common sense back to the community boards. Not that they're wrong. Many times they're wrong. If you go to like 10th Street, there's just too many bars on 10th Street. You wouldn't want another. But 9th Street has no bars. So why would you prevent a bar there?
Right.
And nightclubs have to exist to four under certain conditions. Like they don't cause too much urban. I was in Philly the other day. And you walk by, I took a photo of it. I have it on my phone as I take a million photos. And there's an orange sign in the window of a storefront. And it says, if this place wants to have a license for alcohol, serve alcoholic beverages. And what you do is you go to City Hall, you get this 3x2 piece of paper, an orange. You stick it in your window of the place you want to do it. If nobody objects in 30 days, you get a liquor license. If somebody objects, you go before an arbitrator, and you talk it out. Oh, I'm worried about garbage. You're going to clean the garbage? You're worried about noise. We're going to do this for noise. And bang, it's worked out, and you get a license. That's business. You know, here, it costs $500,000 and a year to get a license. Who is going to invest it only to be shut down by cops who are overactive, noise complaints from 85-year-old women who, you know, don't want to see homosexuals on their block, you know? And this is New York, and that's
right,
what happens.
Right, right, you right, know? Right, right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's just, and it's also just seems so weird to me because, I mean, look, I'm sure there are times where, you know, noise is a problem and there is disrespect or whatever, right? But at the same time, it's like, what is the community, like, if I was to think about all the problems, I mean, this is the inequality city, and rents are way too high, and people are losing their houses and not making enough money, and they're worried about shutting down clubs. It doesn't make any sense. It's a completely misaligned priority.
Yeah, I'm going to write an article about this, but one of the ways to get around this is a thing called the paid detail, which is, and it exists in New York City. If you have a bank or a Saks Fifth Avenue and you want a cop, you can pay overtime for a uniformed cop or two to stand at your door and police the front door. Clubs are not allowed to have it because of Bloomberg and Raymond Kelly and all that. They didn't want it because they were afraid of corruption. Come on. Yeah. So the club should be allowed to hire a licensed cop, a New York City cop, have him stand out, stop cab noises, because the security guard tells a cab to stop honking. He says, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
But a cop says that he has enforcement ability.
Right.
So if you have a cop at each door, plus in an age like this, I think it's good to have an armed police officer to prevent terrorism and things like that. It's happening all over the world. It might happen here, you know, God forbid. But, you know, so having a cop at a door would answer a lot of the community board problems about noise. Keep that door shut. You know, put a guy over there, make sure that door shut because the noise is leaking out.
Right.
You got to build an inner door or something. Work with the building department. Do things that'll stop and be good, have clubs be good neighbors. People might not piss on the street if there's a cop around. May not litter, you know, on the street.
I was actually talking to a guy I'm friends with who was a cop, and it used to be a cop in Atlanta. He did the same thing in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. That was his second gig.
It's a cop.
And then the whole job. And then he said, you know, you're supposed to be very relaxed and be really. Actually, he said, you know, guys like him were easier than the bouncers. They didn't have anything to prove. They're very nice, very relaxed. They're just there to hold space.
Bouncers
like you're
can
talking
ID.
About.
They can watch doors. Like, there's a lot of purposes for bouncers.
Right, right.
But I'm telling you that a guy's less likely to throw a punch or rob a place, you know, if a cop is there.
Oh, of course.
You got to have 4 or 5 guys outside a club. Why? Because some guy will walk up with a gun and, you know, pistol whip somebody and take the money. But if a cop's standing there, less chance. So this is an idea embraced by the industry. And, you know, it needs to be done. And I think under de Blasio, it will get done. I mean, I'm not speaking to him on, you know, all his other problems. But, you know, he's the mayor of New York. They all have problems. But in this case, he's the best mayor we've had.
Cool.
You know, talk is cheap. Let's see.
Yeah, Tbilisi. You know? All right.
There you go. I want to talk a little bit about the past.
Uh-huh.
So we went through a little bit of this off mic, but Danceteria with their infamous, famous time capsule.
The time capsule was an idea I had when I went to the World's Fair in 1964. I think it was 65, actually. It was a 64-65 World's Fair, but I think they buried it in 65. And I was fascinated by it. So I pitched it to Rudolph, the idea of burying a Danceteria time capsule, having, you know, artists and having those. Rudolph went nuts. So if I had an idea, Rudolph is the guy who followed through. I mean, he was the great doer. And he got Diane Brill, who was his girlfriend, a big-chested woman at the time. She was probably still pretty big-chested.
Not anymore?
Yeah. She probably is. Anyway, but it was at the time. But she took her bra off and put the bra in. We had, think we had Basquiat. I think we had Andy Warhol in there. We had lots of weird little things. But we had a note to the year 6984. They were 6984, It was 5,000 years in the future. The papers printed 10 because nobody knew what they were talking about. But it was 5,000 years in the future to be opened. There were cassettes, because we had cassettes back then, of DJs and all that. All this stuff was put in.
Oh, that's cool.
Supposedly it was ransacked by one of the less savory characters who hung around, and all the Warhol and all the really good stuff was taken out, and all the paper and all the crap was actually buried.
you picture some mafia like, yeah, you keep the fucking papers.
And they buried
I'll
in the
take back- the fucking Warhol.
they buried it in the backyard. We had it on closed circuit. The club watched it. Everybody cheered. It was for 2 weeks or 3 weeks that people had contribute into the capsule, and it was really amazing. About 10 years ago, a guy named Kip Lavinger and I, he had a shop that sold tiles on the block. We decided we were going to dig it up. So we went, because I was the only one who knew where the fuck it was. Maybe John Argento, the old one of the old owners, the real owner. Rudolph was the managing partner, but yes. So he went, and Kip and I went and to the place where it was, and there was a concrete slab over it and a 20-ton air conditioning unit. So we said, well, we ain't digging this up. And we felt satisfied that it was going to be there for a very, very long time. And, of course, the other day, everyone woke up to the news that the bomb squad had closed off 21st Street, and they had found our old time capsule, which Rudolph bought, by the way, or John, both of them, I think, a big, giant, shell casing in an Army-Navy store. It was about 3.5 feet long. It looked like a missile. Yeah. And it had a door that opened up, and they filled it up. So the bomb squad went, whoa! The construction workers must have had a heart attack. So it was all over. They closed 21st Street. And I said off camera, it's the same thing. It's that off mic. It was that all good ideas have 1,000 authors. So I know I came up with it because of my World's Fair, Queens World's Fair thing. But it certainly... Everybody ran with the ball, including Marguerite Van Cook and James Romberger, who they were buzz artists of the East Village scene back then. James is in, museums in New York. Mm-hmm. Marguerite is fabulous. I saw her last night. She was at the party. And they curated all the art for it. Frank Bernarducci, who has a gallery on 57th Street. They went nuts. Everybody went nuts and said hello to the future. Apparently, most of the notes say something to the future were, go fuck yourself.
Very, very fitting.
That's what most people
they
said.
They were right.
That's what most people said,
It's so insightful.
But now it won't be found. The contents have not been returned. Oh, the police said after they've analyzed it and whatever, they're going to send it back.
Oh, really?
So John will get it, and then maybe we'll bury it again. Okay. Or he has the Surf City or something like that.
Where were you when you first found out about this?
I wasn't in New York.
Did you hear it first from the news?
No, I got a phone call.
Oh, okay.
I got a phone call, and then it was all over Facebook.
Right.
And I got the invites, because I actually had the invites for it, which says Steve Lewis presents on the top. despite what anybody says who did it, it says Steve Lewis presents and his Marguerite Van Cook and all that. But I found the invites. I had them. I had them in my old portfolio because I thought it was fun. And I dug them out, put them online. Everybody went crazy.
That's amazing.
And as it went, it was really, really fun. The fact that Dan Zatiri was back in the news is great. And as Rudolph said online, he said it was the greatest victory of ever. It's the best ending of the time capsule. Here we are, a bunch of morons back in the day, getting high, having fun, whatever. And we buried it. And to have it found was the exact thing. Shock and awe. And in a way, the world has changed 5,000 years.
I was going to say, it's also a little depressing. You guys were
are as far away as 5,000. This future is 5,000 years different than the future we had at that time. There's such a difference that I can't even, you can't see it anywhere. Once in a while, when I saw Sid and Nancy, that movie, and Gary Oldman was doing Sid Vicious, and there was 10 minutes of that movie that were unbelievably accurate. And I went, whoa, but you can't do it. We live in a 3D world, and to see something in 2D is limited.
Yeah.
And you can't do it because you can't feel the sexual tension or the danger as you walk down the street. I don't think there's a director can really show
you
that.
I haven't seen it. Yeah.
Sid and Nancy was close to that era. It was pretty close, and when the hopelessness of it, and Iggy Pop's music was just unbelievable. And Gary Oldman is a genius. Absolutely.
Gary Oldman's a genius.
Genius, right. So I like that movie in terms of looking back at that time,
I want to see the club that comes out of that movie.
Yeah.
Well, I used to stay in Sid's room. The room, because they got rid of the room. They made it two rooms because people were, people were going to visit the room. They wanted the room, and it was people. They thought people were going to get killed. So it was, God knows. So they got rid of it. But I used to sleep in the room because my friend had it, and whenever I was, I had a wife. I had a few of them actually, but that wife, the first, that wife had a temper.
That wife.
That
Just
wife
call
had
her
a
that
slow
wife.
Burn. That wife had a slow burn temper, and there was these little. I would know. Oh, she's going to flip out. And when she got to that point, I couldn't be around. Right. So when she started doing it, I put my pants on, put my shoes, yes, dear, I don't know how you feel like that, and bam, I was out the door.
I don't know how you feel like that.
You gotta see the motions. He's literally, the pants are getting around the waist. Yeah,
just getting dressed. Just back in the wallet. Oh, I agree with
platitudes,
you.
Platitudes, gets the ring on, run.
I agree. And so I ended up staying in that room. You know, I crashed there because the person who lived there was, she was busy, let's put it that way. And she was there a lot. So I could always crash. So I ended up staying in the room. And I don't think it was haunted.
This is not the Dwayne Reed world.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
but yeah. The irony is now the Chelsea's being renovated, and Sean McPherson has taken it over, and he's a genius. And I did the Bowery Hotel, and the Jane Hotel is his victory. I mean, beautiful, incredible place. To this moment, I was in there for a photo shoot. I'm going to be in L in September for something. And they... it was just incredible being in that room. But he's doing it, and I think he's the one guy who can restore the hotel in the proper way and really show it, the Chelsea, the way it was. Because Chelsea is one of the great stories. And I don't think that's been portrayed really well, what was going on there for like 25 years. I mean, the fact that Dylan Thomas died there, and Arthur C. Clarke, my room where I lived in there, was the room where Arthur C. Clarke wrote 2001. Oh, wow. I mean, you know, it's like this. It's just an incredible... a small town inside New York. That's what it was. It was curated by Stanley Bard, who was like a club doorman. If you were really cool, you could live there. And otherwise, you could stay a week or two. After that, they kicked you out. But so you had half the hotel was really serious people, community, ultraviolet, and Herbert Hunke, who was the Beat Generation founder, and all these really cool people. But once in a while, Grace Jones would walk through, Nina Hagen, or, you know, pretty cool people. Didi Ramone lived there when I was there, and you know, it was an incredible place, and nobody's really done that movie right, and it's really got to be done right. And there's enough photos, and then there's enough history, and the place is still there, so you could do it. I mean, The Professional was shot there, you know, and if you know that, the interior.
Oh,
shot.
Shit!
Yeah, that's the inside. That's the interior. Those railings are gorgeous.
That's dope.
Yeah,
I love that movie.
It's a great. I've seen it every time. That's one of those movies. Every time
it's on,
doesn't matter where in the movie.
Watch it. What do you about? What about Carlito's Way? How is that?
Well, that was produced by Michael Bregman, and the Carlito's Way Junior. The second one was produced by his son, who's a friend of mine. I like Carlito's Way.
Yeah,
I thought Al Pacino was hysterical.
He's amazing in that, right?
But he was funny. I mean, I don't know if he's amazing. He was totally miscast. I mean, he just couldn't do it. Did he do it right? Yes, but it was still, you know.
Why? What is it? The accent? What's the problem?
Yeah, the accent. Yeah. The fact that he is Italian. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, paying what? Puerto Rican, Dominican.
Yeah,
Dominican.
Puerto Rican. Yeah.
It's just dumb. It was just dumb. Right. As opposed to John Leguizamo, who seemed natural.
Right.
In the same
thing. He's underrated as well.
He's an under... Yeah, well, I don't know. He's genius. But
right, okay, it was silly.
But,
right.
But the danger of it...
Yeah, but I'm talking about the atmosphere. Did it catch any of that? I didn't buy into it.
No. Everything was overdone. The mob guys were overdone.
The mob guys were really... I love how overdone the mob guys were.
Sean Penn was...
Sean Penn was Alan Dershowitz.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But I don't think he was anything.
I love it.
He wasn't a lawyer. He didn't have it. He didn't have... Nobody seemed real. And the time didn't seem real. It didn't seem real, I don't think. Not to me, but it's not my experience anyway.
I was curious,
But I love the movie, it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I love it too, but I'm curious.
I love it.
I like the ship design at the club. That's what I like.
I think it was shot on a ship. It was so silly.
Like the whole nightclub literally looks like the interior.
I think
of some,
it was
like
a ship. I think it was one of those ships parked on.
Oh, really?
I don't know, I always thought it was, you know?
Yeah, I know, I mean, it looks like one for sure.
Why would they do that?
And the mafia,
why would they make it that way, if you know what I mean?
I have no idea.
You know? It's easy to do a sound studio and just paint the walls in black or put damask wallpaper up. And, you know, so I think they shot it on the Hudson River.
They shot in the Hudson River.
I think so. You know?
Yeah.
Dude, we've covered so much.
Everything. We always do.
No. Are we done?
Yeah. No.
How are we on time?
33 minutes.
Yeah, we are kind of.
We are. Well, ask one more question.
I don't know if I have one more question. Now I'm just getting entertained. I'm just sitting back being entertained.
I mean, obviously, we just got to socialize off mic soon. That's what we got to do.
Yeah, we'll do that.
All right.
And I have another idea, which every time I'm on the show, we have an idea that's just percolating.
Right.
And I got a good one, which I'm going to tell you guys off mic.
Yeah.
And well, next time I'm on, I'll be able to give you that scoop if it happens. You know,
well, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. We'll see you Tuesday for more Two Dope Boys.
Yeah. Right,
thanks, man.
Thank you, brother.
I had so much fun.
Thanks,
so much
brother.
Fun. Always.
Always.